This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
And that is posing a challenge to many African countries who don't want to align, who want to continue to be able to trade, to receive investment from as many partners as possible.
That's political and business risk analyst Vincent Roget, who says growing competition among China, the United States, and Russia is polarizing Africa. Details coming up. Also, Sudan's military leader says he wants the conflict with the paramilitary rapid support forces to stop. And officials warn that a strong El Nino weather system is going to hit East Africa in the next 3 months. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Malawi's President Lazarus Chakwera says his country has improved laws and the business infrastructure to attract investors. He recently sat down with VOA's Peter Kloti in New York. In this excerpt of this exclusive discussion, Chakwera rejected criticism that he has not done enough to draw in business.
With the laws that we have passed, in order for us to make sure that we become investor-friendly. Land laws that we have passed in order for us to make sure that we become investor-friendly. Not people who can speculate land, but those who want to do honest business on it. We have made this very clear that they are welcome. We have Financial Crimes Court established that deals with other issues connected with this. We have an arbitration center, actually, that's going to be established in Malawi in order to take care of issues that need arbitration. We have put in place the kind of mechanism that says you can go to Malawi Investment Trade Center, a one-stop center, and get everything done. Digitalization has helped. You can register online. You can fast track certain things. In fact, yesterday just told us that research has shown that Malawi is on the top 10 investor-friendly countries in Africa. And so when people say, oh no, this, they may be referring to a specific case and then generalize and say it's no good. We are able to sit down and talk with people, what is the issue here, what is the issue there, and each one of them can be handled, and they are coming. They are investing. It is happening as we speak. Mm.
So, Mr. President, let's focus on the rule of law, the democratic space, because some of the civil society group says your proportion to power was as a result of civil society not liking what is going on and they want things to change. And they are saying that some of the promises that you have made you are yet to keep. They said protesters have been shot with tear gas and that the President Chakwera, they know as a defender of human rights, is allowing the police to use excessive force to dispel those who are venting displeasure with some issues that they are concerned about. Mr. President, how do you respond to such concerns?
First of all, you must understand that Malawi has a vision, Malawi 2063. And within that vision, we have a 10-year implementation plan. And within that plan, we have a recovery plan because of these shocks, including COVID-19. Now, if you look at what is happening, it is following that blueprint. If you are talking about things that need to happen next year, you can't have them happen this year. But you will find that those things that we are detailing following that plan they are happening even as we speak. In fact, we have changed even some laws to make sure that those who want to speak against the leadership, they are free to do that. Sedition laws, we scrap them, because I am one that says everybody needs to be free. We're not talking about certain things that have gone wrong when people want to do stuff. This is according to our Constitution and according to law, and I still stand by the law. So we will give everyone, and we have given everyone, the freedom.
That was Malawi's President Lazarus Chakwere speaking with VOA's Peter Cloti on the sidelines of the United Nations General Assembly in New York last week. The leader of Sudan's armed forces, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, says he wants the conflict with the paramilitary rapid support forces to stop, which would pave the way towards a civilian government. VOA senior analyst Mohammed al-Shanawi has the details.
In his speech to the United Nations General Assembly on Thursday, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan called for designating the rapid support forces as a terrorist organization. However, in an interview with Al Hurra TV, al-Burhan hinted that if the RSF leadership pulled its troops out of residential areas and returns to its barracks, he would sit with any of them to negotiate an end to the conflict. Fighting between the army and the RSF broke out in mid-April over plans for a political transition and the integration of the RSF into the army. In his Al Hurra interview, Burhan pledged to transfer power to a civilian government eventually.
After the war is over, followed by security arrangements, we will for sure move to the second phase of conducting a political dialogue that leads to forming a civilian government to oversee a transitional period paving the way for elections.
Burhan spoke to Al Hurra in New York while he was there for the UN General Assembly. Al Hurra is an independent broadcaster funded by the U.S. Agency for Global Media, which is VOA's parent agency. Burhan denied that he is forming a government and ruled out the idea that Sudan could be divided if the RSF established a rival government in the areas under its control.
I don't think Sudanese have any separatist tendencies, whether in Darfur, Kordofan, or Central Sudan. Sudanese are all determined to keep Sudan united, and they can solve all of their problems among themselves.
Burhan told Al Hurra that he has evidence that there are external parties providing weapons and support to the rapid support forces, but didn't identify any country in particular. He said, "The Saudi peace initiative is so far the best approach to end the conflict in Sudan." He said he thinks the stalled talks, co-sponsored by Saudi Arabia and the United States, still could succeed, and hinted that he may go to Saudi Arabia soon. Several ceasefire agreements brokered by Saudi Arabia and the United States mediators have failed to end the violence so far. Mohammed Al-Shinawi, VOA News, Washington.
Medical workers warn that outbreaks of dengue fever and acute watery diarrhea have killed hundreds in war-torn Sudan. According to the French news agency AFP, the Sudan Doctors' Union is warning of catastrophic spreads that could overwhelm the country's decimated health system. The union said the health situation in the southeastern state of Gadaref, on the border with Ethiopia, is deteriorating at a horrific rate, with thousands infected with dengue fever. Although Gadaref has been spared the direct effects of the brutal war between the regular army and the paramilitary rapid support forces, mass displacement and other humanitarian crises have taken a toll. The United Nations says more than 5 months into the war, 80% of the hospitals in Sudan are out of service. AFP says that before the war, the healthcare system struggled to contain annual disease outbreaks during the rainy season. This year, with Gaddafi hosting upwards of 250,000 internally displaced persons, according to the UN, the situation is much worse. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. An international risk analysis group says Africa's economic progress is threatened by an increasingly polarized world, with the continent suffering the fallout from several geopolitical crises. Darren Taylor reports.
Control Risks and Oxford Economics Africa find that the war in Ukraine, a global surge in inflation, security fragility, and climate shocks are hampering development on the continent. The group's new report says these events have exacerbated uncertainty and forced geopolitical changes that could redefine Africa's role on the global stage. Political and business risk analyst Vincent Rouget says growing competition among China, the United States, and Russia in Africa is polarizing the continent.
And we see more and more foreign policy of these countries towards Africa being more transactional, trying to get African countries to align with their foreign policy views. And that is posing a challenge to many African countries who don't want to align, who want to continue to be able to trade, to receive investment from as many partners as possible. So we're seeing this interesting game on the part of many African countries that are trying to maintain a non-aligned stance, but also trying to make the most of this growing geopolitical competition. And there are areas, for example, minerals, where that competition could be playing to Africa's advantage.
Roger says South Africa, in many ways, epitomizes the continent's complex relations with the rest of the world. The African National Congress, ANC, administration says it's neutral, but is edging ever closer to Moscow, while some in Washington threaten to cut trade benefits to Pretoria.
South Africa illustrates probably more the pitfalls of that polarization, where we've seen the country's reputation, particularly in the US, take a bit of a hit. The country is still trying to find a balance between the US, between Russia, between China. But we've seen in the case of South Africa to what extent this geopolitical fragmentation can now act as a bit of a drain on investment, on investor sentiment, on the stock exchange as well, and on the rand as well.
At a recent US-South Africa Business Forum meeting in New York, President Cyril Ramaphosa insisted a lot of South Africa's problems are not of its own making. He highlighted an international trading system that he said favored richer countries.
We want to have a rules-based trading system in the world, and we want to promote more multilateralism so that all countries in the world should be able to be treated fairly, to trade fairly, and to be able to attract investments into their own economies.
But Roger says there's a high level of risk associated in investing in South Africa because of domestic issues.
One on the economic side is the impact that the power crisis is having on growth, on consumer sentiment, on investor sentiment. It is also the approaching elections due next year, and the feeling that the administration is struggling to send consistent policy signals towards investors in a number of areas. And we're at a time where investors in a number of sectors, be it the energy sector, the mining industry, to name just a couple, are really craving consistent policy direction, which the government seems unable to give at the moment.
The report elaborates on what many regional economists are saying, that many other African economies, particularly in North and East Africa, are developing faster than South Africa's, with higher growth rates and much less unemployment. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Somali officials and humanitarian organizations are warning that a strong El Nino is going to hit the East African region during the next 3 months. Officials at the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, told VOA Somali Service there will be excessive rainfall in East Africa, in the Somali region of Ethiopia, in Somalia, and in Kenya, which is expected to cause flooding. The anticipated El Nino weather system and start of the rainy season are expected to affect up to 1.2 million people in Somalia alone, with communities along the Juba and the Shebale rivers have been warned to take precautionary measures and move to higher ground. Paolo Paron is a senior land and water advisor for FAO Somalia and the FAO Resilience Team in East Africa, a regional office based in Nairobi. He says people should take the arrival of El Nino seriously and start moving.
So during the next October, November, December, or day or season, the rainy season, we expect a strong El Nino. El Nino is a phenomenon which happens in the Pacific, but it has global implications. And in East Africa, in the Somali region of Ethiopia, in Somalia, and in Kenya, it means excessive rainfall. So rainfall above normal. We have 85% likelihood to have rainfall above normal, which means basically it is certain that there will be excess rainfall, and not only in Somalia, but also in Ethiopia and in Kenya. And if you have excess rainfall, it translates into excess runoff, and then it translates into floods in Somalia mostly, but we expect also floods in Ethiopia and Kenya. So this is the situation that will happen starting from mid-October, the big rains. So the rain will start already in October, but the heavy rains will start more or less around mid-October, starting from the south of the country and then moving up north. So first the Juba Basin, then the Shabelle, then Galmudug, and so on.
And how is this going to impact on the lives of local communities in the areas you mentioned it?
So it depends a lot on where the communities are. We expect big floods in the riverine areas, so along the floodplains of the Juba and the Shabelle River. And here we are expecting fluvial floods or riverine floods. The good thing is that, like it happened in May this year, there was a lot of flood in Ethiopia, and we were able to monitor that flooding. It took about 2 weeks from Gode, which is a town along the Shabelle, but in Ethiopia, to reach Beletwen. So we had a lot of time to send alerts to the population in Beletwen to move to higher grounds. The other thing that we expect is in the central and northern part of the country, we expect to have flash floods. So something which is much more destructive and much less predictable, which means that we don't have the data to be able to send alert on time. So our advice is for the people living where there has been flash floods in the past to become aware that also during there will be flash floods. And for the rain-fed areas, what we expect is excessive rainfall, which means on one hand, if it is really a lot of rainfall, we are not able as of now to say how much rainfall, but if it rains too much in a few days, we can have damage to the crops. Otherwise, this excess rainfall will fill all the rain, all the water harvesting structures like the water catchment, the Berka, the Bale, which are in place. It will improve the soil moisture, and it means it can translate in a very good season for fodder production, for example. So there are some risks, but also some opportunities linked to this El Nino season, not only risks.
And what would be your one main message if you could speak directly to the people, Somali people? What would you say to them?
If I could speak now to the Somali people, is to take these messages of the arrival of El Nino very seriously and start already contacting your next of kin who are living in a higher ground and prepare, start moving your things already now. Because between mid-October and end of November, there will be either floods or flash floods, depending where you're living. So if you have experienced this in the past, you have to move to safer ground already, because moving people is fast, but moving goods is not as fast. So I would suggest to the people, start moving now.
City by city, town by town, suburb by suburb, South Africa's running dry as infrastructure essential to get water to homes fails. Equipment at reservoirs has been properly maintained, some experts say, and is constantly breaking. Darren Taylor reports. The U.S. and Kenya have resigned a defense agreement at which the East African nation will get resources and support for security deployments. This as Nairobi is poised to lead a multinational peacekeeping mission in Haiti to combat gang violence. The Associated Press says U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and Kenya's Defense Minister Aden Duale signed the agreement in Nairobi. It guides the country's defense relations for the next 5 years as the war in East Africa against the Al-Qaeda-linked Al-Shabaab extremist group intensifies. Austin thanked Kenya for volunteering to take the leadership of the Haiti multinational force and reiterated that the U.S. government would work with Congress to secure the $100 million in funding that it has pledged. Kenya has committed to sending 1,000 security officers to Haiti to combat gang violence in a mission that is pending the UN Security Council's formal approval, but has received support from the UN and US. Austin is on a three-nation tour of Africa. He began Sunday in Djibouti, then went to Kenya yesterday. After visiting with US troops based in Kenya today, he flew on to Luanda for meetings with Angolan defense officials. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Nabil Biagio, and our engineer, Adrius Regas, thanks for choosing The Voice of America. We'll be right back.